Welcome back to another episode of the No Filter Tattoo Podcast. It's your usual host today, me, Theo.
Not the usual.
Bryson, and finally got Tez back.
I'm back.
Yes, sir. And then today we got a very special guest, man. I'm super honored to have you here, man. We got Tattoos by Randy, aka Randy Harris. Hit the applause button. So you can't hear it right now, but you know, we got the applause going for you, bro. You hear it in the podcast. But before we even, you know, get into it, I want to give an introduction and kind of, you know, hype you up, man, give you your flowers, man. If the people listening don't know you, they need to know you, man. Like I said, you are one of the pioneers, true OGs in the Atlanta tattoo scene. Over 30 years of tattoo experience, you're known for your black and gray, but you get down with color too. And you got like a clientele list of who's who, you know, and tattoo. All these professional athletes and rappers, musicians, everything, you know, Kevin Durant, John Wall, Lil Yachty, Nas, and the list goes on, you know what I'm saying? So, again, man, welcome to the show, and thank you for coming on. How you feeling today, bro?
I feel good. I feel pleased to be here, you know.
Yes, sir, man.
I've been following you guys, too, and I think a lot of you guys work is also.
Man, we appreciate that, bro. That means a lot. So, you said it's your first podcast today?
Yeah, this is my first podcast.
Okay. So that's cool, man.
On the radio before, but
okay, first one. That's good, man. So today, you know, you kind of give clients and just people in general, other artists, a kind of way to kind of see you a bit more, you know, a different side of you, man. So just let's start off easy, bro. How you feeling today, man?
I feel good, you know. Feel good. My first podcast. A little nervous.
A little nervous, man.
I ain't gotta be good, nervous, man.
You know. Yeah, man.
It's cool.
It'll flow easy for you, bro. Yeah. So let's go give the viewers a little bit of history about yourself, bro. So, how long have you been tattooing?
I've been tattooing for about 34 years, exactly.
34 years. Damn, man.
Hold on.
Yeah, but really.
Sheesh. Same.
Really, I started kind of late, so, you know, it's...
How old were you when you started, bro?
I was about 24, 25 years old then. Man.
Okay. You know?
So now I'm 58, so...
Still going,
you know,
strong.
I got to see the art, you know, evolve into what it's become now.
Damn, man, that's amazing to hear. Like, to hear you have such longevity and have that success and passion so long is really good to hear, because nowadays in our industry, you come across a lot of the veteran tattooers, and sometimes they kind of get jaded over the years, you know? Like, they kind of lose that passion and that fire in them. But with you, I can see you still love to do it, man. You still happy, man.
I do love to do it.
And
go ahead.
No, you go ahead.
A lot of the older tattooists, which when I was still kind of maybe starting out, which, you know, it might have been when I was 28 or 30 years old, you know, mm-hmm. It'd be like a kid now when he's 21 because he's already into it. You
right.
Know? So even back then, a lot of guys I got to see, the older, the kind of like the older tattooists become as they got older, you know, their hand might have got a little shaky.
Right, right.
They needed reader glasses. Like when I tattoo, I actually have to tattoo with readers.
Okay.
You know,
okay.
So when I see somebody tattooing younger and they don't need glasses and they're doing this detail, it kind of amazes me, you know,
yeah.
Because now I need readers, you know. Okay. And I've literally seen where some of the really, like, the greatest artists that I really looked up to, mm-hmm. as they got older, it was sad because their work, it was so amazing when I got into tattooing, and I saw, you know, a point where everything didn't seem as amazing, and then it became where I looked at it like, you know, I kind of felt bad because I'm like, wow, man, I think I could actually do that now, but I always looked at these people before me with high respect,
right,
you know,
right.
And never looked at it like, wow, you know, I'm as good as him now, you
right.
know?
Yeah.
And I think back then, everybody kind of was like that. They
yeah.
always looked at the older guy before them. Like,
mm-hmm. Do you feel like
he kind of paved the way? You right. know what I mean?
Yeah. Where, do you feel like that respect today is given from the younger?
I really don't. You know,
I will agree.
I really
honestly,
don't
man.
Feel like that. But I don't blame the younger generation. Because they can't help how they came into what they came into. But,
yeah.
you know, a lot of people, you know, I skimmed over and saw different people who've been on here. But a lot of the people who I've seen on here, they're kind of still younger.
Mm-hmm.
So they don't know what it's like to be the older generation.
Right,
know?
Right.
So they don't know how the respect back then was. Mm-hmm. It was all the way different than now. Right. I think now you get into it, and if you're a good artist, say you went to SCAD or you're a great artist and your parents say, hey, you know, they won't usually push you to do this, but right. you'll figure out like, man, I might do this tattoo thing.
Yeah. yeah.
So I think mm-hmm. now it's more like I got the skill. I could learn some YouTube techniques. Yeah. I could learn this. And I think now it's more like...
oversaturated?
Definitely oversaturated.
Okay.
But I think because the younger generation don't really have like the older, the respect of, right. of the craft like the older did. Mm. It's both.
Look,
I'm like in both worlds.
Right.
Okay. So I could tell y'all like really old school and how all of them mm-hmm. old schoolers think.
Okay.
Or I could think like, you know, I could water it down and be like, oh yeah, you know, and be a different way with it. You
right.
know? But I kind of only know the older way, you know?
Right.
So for me to come on this podcast, it's usually younger people. And I skimmed through a couple of them and I heard the answers, but it was kind of like, you know, sometimes it was kind of from a younger person because exactly. they're younger and came up.
Yeah.
But if that interview was back in the day, they would, right. they would even come off kind of cocky. Okay, you know what I mean? Because now it's about me and my style and mm-hmm. what I do and what I won't do. I won't do this.
Right.
And I don't do this.
Yeah.
Which you could be that if you're great at what you
right.
do.
Mm-hmm.
If you only want to do portraits and you're that good, then, you know, do portraits, mm-hmm. you know. But I see sometimes the younger artists, they might put themselves in a bottle and say, well, I only do this or I only do this.
Right.
And then when it gets slow, what you going to do then?
Now you set
what
you
going to do
failure.
When you get older and your hand's
mm-hmm.
shaky
mm-hmm.
And all the other people who everybody looked at like they were scratchers get good.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
It's just an evolving thing.
Exactly.
You know, you guys right now, you at an age where you in your prime with this, where you mm-hmm. don't have an issue with that. Y'all could go 20, 30 more years before you even think about these young guys like you guys come along and kind of take their business, so right. to say, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Which by the end, you got so much client built up.
Right.
You could just ride it like I do.
Mm-hmm.
I don't worry about other tattoo artists.
Right.
I mean, I used to for years. And it was just all about me being successful in the competition.
So what changed that mindset over the years?
Well, over the years, as you get older, you know, you look at it like, well, I feel like I could just cruise and make it and still, you know, mm-hmm. I still had enthusiasm every day, you mm-hmm. know, to go into the shop, you know.
Yeah.
And I even pass it on to my daughter. I say, mm-hmm. hey, you know, and it's things I've heard on your guys' podcast about, hey, I'd rather do this than go do what I used to do.
Right.
You
yeah,
know,
we appreciate all the time.
You know, my daughter, she never worked any other job.
Mm-hmm.
So it's great that she don't have to do what we did because I've mm-hmm. heard all you guys say you worked other jobs, but mm-hmm. Will she ever know how good she got it? You know, because I tell her, I hear in the tattoo shop in a day, five people will say, man, you're the greatest ever.
Mm-hmm.
But I told her when you work a regular job, people might tell you once a year you do a good job, you know.
Yeah.
So
that 25-cent raise.
Yeah. You know, or hey, y'all, we lucky that nobody's, we were going to lay people off. But if we all take a pay cut, y'all, we could, you
right.
know. Yeah.
Gave you the holiday pay. So
right.
Be grateful.
Right.
Yeah, man, but. See, like, perspectives like that is why I'm glad to have you on. Because, like you said, we did kind of have a lot of people in that, you know, tattooing maybe 10 years, 8 to 10 years, 12 years kind of range. But
that's most of the people you're around, too. You know what I mean? That is most of the people you guys are
but
around.
But like you said, like, I do feel like a lot of younger generation these days doesn't want to listen to their OGs and what they've been through, you know, because a lot of times, you know, you kind of get that, it's easy to get that ego, right? You get success, and then you're like, man, that's what y'all went through. That ain't going to happen to me, you know?
Yeah.
But it's not.
We all heard our parents say they climbed over the mountain to go to school.
Right.
And they, you know, so I'm 58, and I heard the stories. Right. I was a person who was, you know, looked at like I don't appreciate being able to have a school bus or my school being a mile away, you know.
Yeah.
So I heard the hard stories, and, you know, my mom is, you know, she's 89 years old, and she's full Japanese. So the way my mom, like, you know, told me stories of when she was in Japan. Mm-hmm. It was like more humbling, you know, and she would always tell me things that always kept me humble like right. that, you know.
It's good to be grounded, man.
I was raised by my grandparents, and my grandpa, like, no lie, he almost got hung by the Ku Klux Klan. So he told me, like, all the struggles he had to go through.
Yeah.
The only thing that saved him, he was a school teacher.
With that being said, man, we had another episode a few episodes back with Prof, and we talked about, like I said, dedication and longevity in his career, and that was good to have his perspective on it. But I feel like this would be a great way to kind of follow up, but to kind of get someone who's been in it, you know, three times as long, you know, and still successful and thriving, man. And so, like I said, I just want to pick your brain and kind of see what it takes to be, you know, to end up being in your spot, you know what I'm saying, down the line, because that's what we should all thrive for. You know, if you're watching and you feel like, you know, you've reached success and you're only 5-6 years in, like, nah, that's just the beginning of the race, man. It's a marathon. So,
right.
Shit, you got a long way to go. So, what better way to learn about it than for someone who's actually done it?
Yeah.
So, you was telling us you've been tattooing 34 years. Man, how hard was it? Or just tell us about your experience of how you got started. Because, you know, these days, like you said, we can go on YouTube, right, and just learn. Yeah. So
the way I got started was it was a guy who had a tattoo shop. It was in his house, but it must have been zone commercial. But it was kind of like a house tattoo. And, you know, back then, nobody I knew really, like, black did tattoos.
Right.
Everybody was just white who did tattoos, you know. So I remember somebody said, and then at the time I was working for city transit.
Okay.
So, you know.
Driving buses or?
No, I worked in HR.
HR, okay.
In a print shop, but it fell under human resources.
Okay.
So this guy said that he was teaching people how to tattoo, but it was more like, it was really a guy, he did a lot of bikers.
Mm-hmm.
He was an older white guy, and he would basically just get people from the neighborhood who would hear about him, and he would sell, like, equipment, and he would try to teach you, you know.
Okay.
So I never had a formal apprenticeship, you know, like some people, you know.
Right.
So, you know, I worked around him, and he told me a few things, and he told me certain things that, well, you know, he said, you know, I said, what's these needles? And he said, those are mags, you know, don't use those because they tear the skin up, you know. And later I learned right. that, you know, it was maybe backwards a little
mm-hmm.
bit, you know, but he was probably limited in what he knew how to do. So he mm-hmm. probably just used 14 rounds, you know
right.
what I mean? And I know people who, you know, it's now sound crazy, but they use 14 rounds and they you because they are shaders too,
mm-hmm.
you're not just liners.
Yeah.
So they use 14 rounds effectively. But now, you know, you're better off probably using the mag on
yeah.
with things, you know.
Yeah.
So he would try to teach me the best he could. But,
mm-hmm.
you know, I think it was more like a situation where, like, you know, it was me getting taken advantage of, you know.
I got you. My free labor is kind
of. Oh, yeah.
yeah.
I just remember back in the day, Dynamic, or in the back of one of the tattoo magazines back then, they had like a sample set of inks.
Yeah.
It might have been a 12-bottle set that was like $80.
Okay.
Okay.
But up till then, you know, we didn't know the prices of stuff. So, mm-hmm. you know, when it came to, like, you know, him saying, well, we're going to buy ink now, you know, and it might have been I might have been charged $300 or $400. It was $80.
You threw a little tax on top of that.
yeah, everything was like a tax, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Like, but I'm not knowing, and you didn't have you didn't have Amazon. You couldn't.
It
wasn't even no internet then.
Yeah,
it wasn't no internet.
Right, yeah.
So it's hard. Even for you guys to think, like, wow, what if I couldn't compare a price? What if I couldn't?
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, a needle on a needle bar back then was a couple dollars.
Okay.
You know, it was high. It wasn't like now, you know,
mm-hmm.
it was a couple dollars. Later, you could buy a whole box of needles on needle bars from China. It might have been an $8 box or something,
mm-hmm.
you know. Yeah. I didn't buy those needles, but I saw as time came on, needles became more accessible, you know. So he would sell me some things, and sometime it would be, you know, I might see his tattoo machines, and then, you know, he might sell me one, and then he'll have a different one that look like like better than the one he sold me, you know. And mm-hmm. I would say, wow, man, I want one like that. And, you know, he would say, you're not ready for that yet, you know.
Right.
So he would kind of sell me things, and, you know, I would go back in there and see, like, all these new things, you know, that he bought. Mm-hmm. Uh-huh. More than likely off the money that he sold me his equipment.
You right.
Yeah.
So the back of that magazine, that sample set picture kind of gave me it made me know, like, wow, he's charging you like four or five times
right.
more than what this.
How long did that take you, by the way, to see that magazine?
How long did it take? It might have took me three months.
Okay.
You know.
All right.
And I say 3 months, but that was me. Like I said, I had a full-time job. Mm-hmm. So it was me just really going around him maybe like a couple times a week, you know.
Right.
Two to three.
And so from there, I knew how to tattoo, but I had other jobs, and I would paint murals for people. And my personal art generated revenue to where I did that. And I always had a job, like a city job or what people considered a good job. Right. You know? Yeah. So from there, I was kind of idle for a while. I would only do a tattoo if you said, oh, you don't know how to do no tattoos, so I'll set my stuff up and tattoo. Yeah. But I never really had nobody to really, like, to look up to.
Right.
Mm-hmm. I never had, like, the mentor.
Right. It's not like how it is today where it's so many people out there to even if you're not apprenticing, you can just reach out DM or go to their shop and just hang. Like,
yeah, you could really.
It was a lot more hush hush back then.
It's a thousand times more, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, and that's where when you're older, you don't, you can't look at it like, well, they got it easy now, because people might say that, but now it's everybody could go on these same things. So.
Yeah. The level of skill.
Yeah, the level of skill. Everything is just becoming so more hyper focus because everybody got access to the same things.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, it's an advantage, but then it's so oversaturated that it becomes difficult, you know?
That's when we look at it.
You gotta find a way to separate yourself from everybody else.
Right. And so along the years, I would start going to tattoo conventions, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And it was kind of hard because, like I said, it back then, you know, and...
Were you going, like, to tattoo or just going to, like...
No, I was just happy to go.
You happy to go? Yeah, yeah. Just check out the artists stuff.
Check out these artists, you know what I mean? And and just buy like t-shirts.
Right, right.
And you
some
know,
prints or something.
Like that they bumper stickers.
Right.
And, you know.
Yeah.
But, you know, I noticed when I went, it was, my mother's Japanese and my father's African American. But in life, I always looked at it like, you know, people say, what are you? I just said black. I'm black and Japanese, but I just, you know, where I grew up, it was African American, the whole neighborhood. You know, my mom was the only person in and it wasn't nobody white in my neighborhood.
Yeah.
Everybody was black, and I went to HBCU, so everything was, you know. So along as years went on, I would go to these tattoo shows just to try to, like, man, I mean, you would go to this tattoo convention and you would just hope that from for one, you would have to be, is nobody there is black. You get the funny looks. You do. Like, what you doing here, you know? And so I remember, like, you know, but if you asked them humbly, can I check out, you know, your work? And they would let you come in the booth just to look for a second.
Right.
You would be so happy to just be close enough to see his needle.
Right. Just get a little tidbit of info.
He's lining. How far is his needle out? Something that now... If somebody didn't show you, or if you didn't have YouTube on if I'm lining, and even sometimes me knowing certain things that I got good at watching YouTube, it's a lot of misinformation too.
It's
a lot of average information. And
yeah.
A lot of it, and it's obvious when you're good at something, you could kind of tell what level people are
on
YouTube. You know, you could tell that he's just regurgitating something he heard from him.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I would go to these conventions and really try to figure out, like, the littlest
yeah, the little,
things,
those little
like,
tricks.
How far did he have his needle out when he was lining or when he was shading? It looked like he did this. But back then, if you seen somebody packing color with a big mag, it just looked like they're just scribbling, like they're just doing whatever in the skin, but they were really packing the color using 23 mags or bigger mags, you know. Mm-hmm. So I would just go and try to pick up any little thing that I could, you know, along the way. And and I would get a bag and I would collect all the stickers. And stickers that to this day, I got a collage of stickers from tattoo shows I went to, you know, 20 years ago, you know. So it was like over the years, I just kind of learned, you know.
Okay. So did at what point did you... Did you ever work at another shop, or did you go into like opening your own shop, or like how did that transition work?
No, then I moved to Atlanta in 2000.
Okay.
It was when the Super Bowl was here. And
That was a Ray Lewis Super Bowl, right?
Yeah.
I remember. Lewis.
And so when I moved here, I worked at a Kinko's and a Rooms to Go Furniture, even though I knew how to tattoo, you know, I was starting fresh. And even Kinko's back home, I would have never worked at Kinko's, but I was starting over, you know. So I worked at Kinko's and I saw, and everybody I worked with were like really great. Like one guy maybe was in the music, another person in the real estate. So I worked around really good people when I worked there. Okay. But one day I saw an ad in a paper and I knew how to tattoo, but I wasn't like a professional to me. When I look back, I was just maybe good enough to maybe like work in like a flea market shop or something, you know? So I saw an ad and I responded to it, and it was a tattoo shop downtown Atlanta.
Okay.
In the underground.
Oh yeah, yeah.
So I took my portfolio down there and it was like 10 people waiting to get tattooed, and I took my portfolio, and the guy, he looked at it and he saw a portrait in there, or the people in the lobby started looking at the book, you know. And I didn't want to, you know,
come here.
I don't want to look like I'm short-stopping or coming here trying to, you know, be
poaching.
So the people started looking at the work and they were like, he does portraits. And I noticed that the guy had pictures posted, and it was one portrait up there, you know.
Okay.
And so the people were amazed at the portrait. And so when the guy came out, he asked me about, you know, what kind of work I did. And he looked at my book, and he asked me to tattoo somebody on the spot.
Yeah.
He had a guy that was hanging around who had tattoos, and he said, tattoo this guy on the spot, you know.
Right.
And so I'm tattooing this guy, my hands shaking.
I got
the job. So I worked this job. And, you know, and now, just like now, you know, if somebody say, hey, man, learn how to, like, do names. A lot of tattooists now it's cool to, like, know different scripts and fonts, you know. But back then, you know, nobody wanted to be the guy who did names, you know. So this shop I worked at, we would do names, like, all day. We did names, we did praying hands, we did that Tupac cross hundreds of times, you know, like that's all we did, you know. But when I look back, different people I've ever worked with, they weren't good at lettering,
right?
Because they never had to do it.
Mm-hmm.
They never had to do it. And if it was a younger generation, they could just go on Procreate, or they just went online, Photoshop, you know. So they never had to practice to be so good at it, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
You know, and if I came up in that era, I probably wouldn't have tried as hard, because I would have just been able to. And sometimes some people who freehand letters, they need to go on Procreate and print. It's a place for the lettering, the font off the computer. Mm-hmm. Sometimes, you know.
Yeah.
So it worked, you know. But I would just try to get better as I was working there, and I might have worked there for 3 or 4 months, and the guy said, man, you're good. I'm gonna send you to my other shop, which was on Old National.
Okay.
So now I'm going to like a different area, and it was inside of a flea market. And when I walk in there, I could hear like people selling CDs, loud music, and it was about 4 tattoo artists, you know. And when I came there, it was a couple of the dudes were from Florida, and one of them I befriended. We became real good friends. He later worked for me when I opened the shop. So when I opened the shop, I knew that I wanted this guy who, when I came in the shop, he kind of mentored me, you know.
Right.
And his friend used mags. So now he's like, yeah, we'll teach you how to use mags, you know, this and that. So I might have picked up things from different people, and I just kind of went from there, you know. And after I worked there for about 2 or 3 years, then I kind of just started doing them out of my house.
Okay.
You know, And so I would tattoo out of my house, but it was like, I had all the equipment.
Right, right. You had a professional setup kind of.
Yeah, you know, and back then, you could, the only way I could even order the supplies was because the people I worked for had a relationship with a professional tattoo supplier.
Mm-hmm.
You couldn't go on Amazon and buy nothing. Mm-hmm. So everybody now who could get into this, they could go and have access to all kind of equipment that if you didn't have like a business card or a phone book ad, they weren't selling you supplies. You had to come like recommended from another professional artist before they would even sell you supplies.
Right.
So, you know, so at the house, you know, and I always knew it was a stigma attached to it.
Mm-hmm.
Not like now, because now everybody will say, well, I'm going to move downtown in the loft and I'm going to have a private office.
Right.
Whenever I hear that, I'm like,
everybody wants a private studio.
Everybody want a private. Yeah, some of these people is just, you know, I don't want to be on that level of like, you know. So I admire like this shop, this artwork, and seeing the dedication of the people around you who stay around you guys, because it mean a lot to see artists who want to be in this environment right here. You know,
yeah, for real.
And
man.
So I would tattoo out the house, and then I remember where I would drive all the way to Buckhead, and I would get all the tattoo magazines, you know. And I mean, back then it might have been like 10 different ones, some from the UK, and I would always just, you know. And then you could submit entries, you know. Now I don't know how they do it now. I think you just send digital files, but back then, to get in like skin art or skin and ink, you had to go get all these photos developed. You would have to have really good pictures, and you know, they were real strict. You couldn't write on the back of the photo, you had to send it a certain
way. What kind
of
cameras were you using back then?
Just a little disposable, maybe sometimes. And I remember going to Eckers and having all these pictures developed, and I would try to submit these photos to these people. And I remember one time, you know, I went downtown to Buckhead to the bookstore, and I opened it up and saw one of my tattoos in one of these magazines.
Damn.
And so back then, it was like a big thing because I'm not even really working in a shop yet, and I'm starting to have, like, tattoos published in tattoo magazines, you know.
That's crazy.
And I remember one time, in the back, they would have, you know, it would be like, Theo, you know, Golden Anchor with the address, you know. They actually put my address to my apartment address in the magazine.
Hey, yo.
So I was real embarrassed by that, you know. I mean, real embarrassed, you know. And even when I would go to conventions and people would be like, they might say, hey, we'll work. And you know, I might show them a tattoo or tell them. But I knew that it was a stigma attached to it, to where when they would say, hey, where you tattoo at? And I would have to say, like, now in the house, I would almost put my head down because I was ashamed that I was, you know, in the house, you know. But like I would tell anybody young, you know, when they say, well, how long do you think you should wait before you open a tattoo shop? It was probably going to be your next question, you know. But I think it depends on your skill level. I think it depends on whether you worked to me, if you ask me, you have to work in a tattoo shop. You have to work in a tattoo shop for, I mean, to me, I think you need to work there like 5 years at least. You know, I think a good amount of time for you open a tattoo shop. I mean, I don't know. Everybody's different, but I would say 5 years if somebody asked me, I'll say, hey. And then it depends on who they were around. If they worked in a shop with a person who ran that shop right, made people pay taxes. not make people pay taxes.
Yeah, actually,
but
teach them
like, bro, you're going to want you want to declare an income eventually. You can't just live with your homeboy and not have credit. And, you know, you want to be able to have a nice car. You want to be able to have credit. You want to buy homes and later have a retirement, you know, Social Security. You got to pay into that so that when you're older, you will have, like, you know, it's like me. I'm just trying to keep tattooing, and I don't look at this like it's a retire thing, y'all. This is to the end. Like, you know, I'm telling y'all now, this is what I'm going to die doing. You know, they're going to just say, today, Randy, he didn't make it in, bro. Like other older tattooists I know. Yeah. You know what I mean? We just, it's a lifelong thing. So I hear people say, well, I'm dedicated to this. Yeah, but tell me that when you 58 like me and say I'm going the rest of these years all in on tattooing. And that's how I feel like.
You got another 34 years left.
Yeah, and now with my daughter doing it with me, it's just, even if I thought about maybe we might move and get a house on the beach somewhere and retire and me just do art for the local, you know, local art for the tourists, now that whole motivation is different. Right. Because now my daughter do it, so now I just want to live forever to keep doing it with her now, you know.
That's dope, man. I'd love to experience that with my son, man, down the line. So just seeing how you kept it in the family is real motivational. It's real cool. Because you don't see too many, like, generations of tattooing, right? Like, going from one generation to the next, and then hopefully, you know, maybe even to the next one.
Yeah. Sure. I don't know of any, like, father-daughter, you know, tattoo. You know, I know it's probably something out there, but I do look at it like it's so unique. It's like, out of everything I've ever done, it's like my biggest accomplishment to me. One of the things I'm most proud about is that I'm able to teach my daughter a skill that, and her have the talent to be able to pick it up, you know.
Yeah, and that's the blessing of what we do. Yeah, it's like,
so every day is just, I go to work so happy to, you know, to work with her, you know.
Yeah, all right, so now you've basically kind of building a name for yourself. You got in the magazines, and, you know, eventually your shop comes along. But now, like I said, you basically, at one point in your career, you kind of just blow up and you start tattooing these professional athletes and rappers and everything. And so how did that, like, was that something you tried to do, or was it just something that you was in the right place, right time? Or
I would say I was in the right place at the right time.
Right place, right time?
You know, I remember, like,
what was your first big break, and then from there it just...
First, I remember when I worked in the flea market shop, you know, a local rapper, you know, he was blowing up, and I tattooed him.
Yeah.
Then I tattooed, like, DJ Unk when Walk It Out was out.
Yeah, okay.
Two Step. And he had a big following. He broke Ringtone Records with Two Step. And
that was
all
a hit,
that. So I remember the day he shot the video. So I started, you know, I wouldn't go, because I was a little bit older then. You know, I didn't go to a lot of things, because by then I might have been about 35 or 36.
Mm-hmm.
So I would go to things, but I didn't want to be like the older dude around all these young people, you know. But I would go and I would meet people, not even trying to meet people, just very few people. And then it would just snowball into me meeting more people. And I remember one day somebody said, somebody called me, they said they worked at Justin's restaurant. Back then that was Puff Daddy's restaurant on Peachtree. And somebody said, yo, like, Bubba Chuck, you know, Bubba Chuck wants you to tattoo him, you know. And I don't know, it must have just been somebody I tattooed. Mm-hmm. And this is where I tell people, you never know who that person who you did in the past could bring to you, you know.
Really?
So they're like, yo, Bubba Chuck, which that's Allen Iverson, but only people who really know him refer to him as Bubba Chuck.
Damn, so you got tattoo AI?
Yeah, yeah. What? So they were like, yo, Bubba Chuck gonna come out there. And I was like, okay. But a guy that I knew from the flea market came with him that day, you know. Rest in peace. His name was Troop. He a Southside legend, you know. I always got to mention his name, because, you know, he was one of the people who, and I mean, everybody knows this guy, you know. He came with Allen Iverson, and I did the spider web on his neck that says Virginia Slim, and it was like a real iconic tattoo later, you know.
Yeah.
And so I remember that day Wingo from Jagged Edge came with him, and once I tattooed him and I put the picture on the wall, it just seemed like after that
wildfire.
It wasn't like people saw that picture, but my name just started getting out. Then as I tattooed, you know, like certain people, like Monica, the R&B singer, she did a lot for me. She, you know, once I tattooed her, her reach with all the female, with everybody, you know, she an Atlanta legend. So from her, she was able to, you know, send me, you know, all these people, Toya, Melanie Fioni, Missy Elliott.
Man.
So it just starts snowballing into just more work. You know?
Yeah, man. See, you were true to me, like, celebrity artist. You basically like the Atlanta version of a cartoon, bro. Like, where you know what I'm saying? You tattooing all these big names, because these days you got like, You got new artists, right? They tattoo like, I don't know.
They celebrity tattoo.
Yeah. And being like, all right, you ain't no celebrity artist. Calm down, bro.
That's something I would tell young people. Like, don't do that. Don't. Yeah. I mean, it's cool. What, like, I know you want to be that, and you got to work towards that. But if you just do like a couple people, and I mean, sometimes it be people nobody even know. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. But everybody starts somewhere, and if that make them feel better, but it just. It doesn't really come off right when it says celebrity tattoo artist. Exactly. You know,
like that's what I love about you, bro. It's like you, despite all the success that you had and the people you've been around, like you're still very humble. Like even on, like on your IG page, like you don't got none of that. It's just book an appointment with me. That's it. Tattoos by Randy. Like it's like you don't got to brag and like I did this, I did that. It's like they just you do work, you good, you do good by people, and they find you.
And that's what I believe. That's why a lot of times, you know, I would tell a lot of tattoo artists, just try to do good work and just try to, you know, just try to be like personable to another. You know, you can't be too personable because you'll have too many friends. You know, in 10 years, you'll have people, hey, I was riding down the street. I just wanted to stop by. So you can't be too personable, but it's a way you treat people that will make them really respect you. Because if you cocky, they're not going to respect you. On IG, like nobody on my IG ever leave like bad things, because even people who on there would probably cuss them out or tell them off. I wouldn't even have to tell them off. Mm-hmm. But if you on there, you know, if you on there and you showing off too much, I think, you know, people like they start taking shots at you.
Oh, yeah.
You know, that's just how this is. So I would tell somebody, if you can't take people taking shots at you, just be humble yourself more and you won't get that.
That's real. No, I definitely I agree with that, man. It's a lot of ego around here, especially in Atlanta. But I don't know. It's good to see that people can have success and still be humble, man. So, like I said, I salute you for that. With that being said, so now, like I said, you've been in this industry so long. You've seen so many changes, man. You've been here before, like I said, before internet. Now with social media being such a big part. And knowledge being so readily available, man, like how have you like adapted over the years or stay relevant, you know, like just because you like say it's easy to be like I said stuck in your ways and not wanting to evolve with the industry, but like you ain't missed a beat. So what's the secret, man?
I think the secret is for me is it was just being around young, you know, the culture of the younger people, you know, and because, you know, say with the NBA, that was probably like the niche that probably like propelled me throughout my whole career, you know, tattooing John Wall, you know, since he left Kentucky, and it just became these people. So I'm around all these young clients that. Right. You know, it's like when they fly me and we go to L.A. and they rent a house for a month in Beverly Hills. And, you know, it's like you got to this is key right here, what I'm about to say. If you're older and you don't appeal to a younger crowd, you kind of might fall off right there.
Yeah,
because these young superstars and, you know, these people, you got to have at least a certain level of you know, they like you, then they're going to love you regardless because you're doing these tattoos.
Yeah.
You know, these NBA dudes told me before, people look at us like stars, but we look at you like you a star.
Right.
Because you do something we can't do. Mm-hmm. And I always remembered that. A dude said, no, bro, you a star. To us, you're a star. Mm-hmm. And I was humbled by it, you know, but I got what he was saying, you know. Yeah. But for me, being around younger people, it always keeps me like to where I could go around and, you know, you don't want to go out, you know, be in Miami and they rent a yacht, you on the boat and all these internet girls and bottle girls and all these people on there. And you know, you're not dressed right. Or, you know, these people like who's uncle, like who is he like over there, you know?
Yeah.
So, you know, when you older, you might have to, you know, you got to dress a part.
Yeah.
You got to. You know, even if you didn't want to, you got to go and you got to spend money if you're going to get invited out to be around these people.
Mm-hmm. Oh, okay.
You might, I mean, everybody dress how they dress, but you might want to, like, look a little extra that day.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So that you know, and now with the internet, you know you're going to be on camera, so try to look a little bit, you know, the part.
Nah, that's big,
around, you know.
Yeah.
And was that first impression is everything, right? So you got to trust and impress, though. So I definitely respect that. So you just being around the young people, man, has kept you in the game and just, like, keeping up. But even then, I would say like you own your shop, right? For how long have you owned your shop now?
I've owned it for 20 years.
20 years. So how do you like, that's another accomplishment right there, man, because just owning the shop is tough, right? And then maintaining it for 20 years is even tougher. So like, how have you like throughout the years just been consistent and even throughout like, you know, gaining artists, losing artists and all that, like how do you just maintain that level of quality?
I feel like I was able to maintain it because like the artists that worked there, they worked there for a lot of years, you mm-hmm. know, and I can honestly say that all the artists who worked with me, you know, I felt like with me being busy, it was times where, you know, they had to take calls for me. Everybody who worked there helped make me become who I became.
Yeah, that's true.
Flat out, just right off. You know, I mean, people might have left my shop, and even if it wasn't all the way good terms, I respect everybody who left. Right. I thank them for the years they worked with me. Mm-hmm. You know, and you know, because everybody, you know, I just believe that, you know, everybody got a time where they want to branch off. You know what I mean? Some people, hey, if it's good where you at and it's progressive, stay there, you know, mm-hmm. and be a team. You know, I'm for that more than anything, you know. But I think I was able to keep it going because I had really good employees. Mm-hmm. And like I said, all these employees really helped me all along the way. Like mm-hmm. I never had like a personal assistant who answered my calls. And I always just kept it real. And this would help me. You know, people say you're so humble, but it kept me humble because, you know, I was just in there just and I didn't have all these people doing things for me, you know, mm-hmm. and even some of the opportunities that at one point I said, well, maybe I should get like a publicist or a manager who could get me gigs outside of this. But just off my relationship with the people I tattooed, I was able to morph into, you know, doing a shoe with Nike, with mm-hmm. Kevin Durant. And I was able to do for EA Sports, the video game, tattoos in the video game, NBA Live.
That's crazy.
Yeah, it ain't all on the internet. Yeah, but, that's you know, crazy, these are things that, you know, they used it for years. Yeah. You know? So I would say that the people who work with me and just, you know, being good to the customers, you mm-hmm. know what I mean? Yeah. Just being good to the customers. Because like I said, in the end, you can have an ego, but people, when it's so saturated, mm-hmm. they'll go to a lesser person.
Yeah.
That's like a barber shop. We know that guy in the first chair, he the man. But if he's not, you don't get that vibe from him. And you can go to somebody who's 90%, who's only 10% less than him.
Right.
People will go to you, you know. And it's what I stressed in the beginning to my daughter, who, you know, she's like, mm-hmm. maybe I'm in the beginning might not be good enough up to par yet. And I said, well, once you get up to par, your personality, people are going to like mm-hmm. your personality.
Yeah, that's
you know, it's a lot of shops that got, you know, a guy who might be better than the other people, but everybody offers something. And everybody, you know, if you like anime, you go to the anime mm-hmm. person. Mm-hmm. When people come in there for me to do anime, I tell them right off. I'm like, oh, she does anime, so go to her. Or mm-hmm. more like, you know, like you know, I would tell them to go to him. Like, man, this guy I know, he's like so good at anime. I would literally do that, you know. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
If you do graffiti, I'm not going to do graffiti tattoo. I'll do it, but I feel like I'm kind of like faking it.
Yeah, ain't your best.
You know, you climb over bridges to do graffiti, and it's really your thing, you know.
Right.
Where it ain't my thing. I feel like I'm just stacking letters. I can mimic it,
mm-hmm.
you know, all day long. Yeah. It's not real, so mm-hmm. I would rather like the person who worked with me do the graffiti.
Right.
That's how we always do it.
Yeah,
that's how a good shop should be. You know what I'm saying? Like everybody showing love and pushing what they passionate about to each other. But you know, not every shop built like that, right? So, what do you? I know we kind of talked about it a little bit earlier, but I want to kind of go more in depth about like a lot of these new artists now want to go and get these private studios like real soon in their careers and stuff. Like, so how do you feel about that coming from your perspective, man? Because it's like you said, it's on one end like. You can respect the growth, like, if you feel like you're ready for that.
It's everywhere.
But it is, like, you feel like it's oversaturated right now?
It's with so the private, super oversaturated.
Yeah.
I can say it is.
Yeah, I mean.
Just like this, I can say it to the camera. Hey, man, I can't pay your bills. Fuck it.
Yeah. It's like, at the end of the day, like I said, how you feel. Like, I don't want to be the guy who's hating on someone for doing their thing, but at the same time, it's like.
No, it's valid. Because, I mean, when you put together a shop like this shop you have, I mean, you know, you work hard to have it. You know what I mean? And you could see where all of those you know, things happening, it kind of, it cuts into business. I mean, it'd be, you know, some lady whose nephew do tattoos.
Right, right.
He got a loft and he live in the loft. And, yeah, but now it's like some of my clients say they 15-year-old daughter, oh man, she's good at braiding. So they'll say, we set the garage up for her to do braids. And, mm-hmm. You know, the girl 15 probably make $500-$600 a day.
Yeah.
At 15, because she's doing these box braids or braids that the person my age can't do, you know, mm-hmm. and she went on YouTube and learned how to do it, and
right.
now she, different you know, she's, yeah, so that lady my age who do hair, she kind of lose clients. It's like the hair ladies who used to do sew-ins. Then when the wigs and weaves came out, they kind of couldn't survive, because the whole, imagine your whole career was sewing hair in, and now yeah. nobody do that.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, you know, you kind of fall off a little.
Yeah.
No, that's real.
But do you think, kind of like that example, but even maybe, like you said, your age, but you were still adaptable, though. Do you think it's more people won't do that as the average solution or something like that? I'm trying to.
Not adapting?
Yeah, not adapting. Yeah.
What, as far as like in having a shop, like in a loft or whatever?
Oh, no. You know how you used the example of the sew-in?
Mm-hmm.
But then you said people came with wigs.
Oh, yeah, they not yeah, it's like they're not adapting.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, it's like some people who listen to this, their parent or their grandparent. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like when they get a new cell phone, they don't even know how to work the new cell phone.
I understand,
you know, and I'm kind of like that now. I am that person now.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, so they would like to, but I think the information and everything moves so fast that I think then when they do get onto that, it's another thing.
Mm-hmm.
So now you older chasing these younger people in this knowledge, and it's hard to keep up, man.
Yeah, no.
And that's where after a while, you just kind of just fall into, well, I'm just going to do this. And these,
right.
you just kind of get not passed up, but you older too.
Yeah,
so you just, you just got to kind of know that, you know, your better days are behind you, you know, mm-hmm. like me. You know, a lot of people who I look up to, you know, some of these people passed away to where I'm like, wow, I didn't think about it, but you know, I feel blessed every day to like do these tattoos, you
right.
know, like I'm still able to do it at a high level and,
mm-hmm.
and still get flew out by people. And really like now I don't really like flying out. It's like that, you know, I like being with my family. I going home and, you know, but you know, if I was younger, I would be more into the flying out and like tattoo conventions, you know,
so
I like tattoo conventions, but after a while it got so oversaturated also that it became more about, in the beginning, it was more about the artists and what they wanted. And we give them everything they need to have this convention. We making money off of it and it was cool. But I think later it just became about, let's get all these people to get booths,
mm-hmm.
no matter what skill level they are. You couldn't.
Right.
Now, don't get me wrong. You got to be, no matter what convention circuit, you got to be a certain level to be able to do it.
Right. Right.
They are not going to just let anybody.
Mm-hmm.
But to me, over the years, it got so saturated. But it could just be the sign, things that just going to change that, you know, people saw you can make money. And it became more about them making money and let's do this whole circuit of conventions all these cities. And then people in other cities who had tattoo shows, like, you know, like say here in Atlanta, I know Tony Olivas at Sacred Heart, he always had the big convention.
Right.
So now other people coming in on dates and it started causing rifts, I think, you know, with the convention circuit, you know. In Atlanta now it's two conventions, you know.
Yeah.
And then at first I think even when it was just one, they might have started making money where they were like, let's have one in the spring and one in the fall.
Yeah.
You know.
It's so then it
became
now.
Then it became a couple more people wanting to have conventions, and it just became like the old heads, you know, and the new people, you know, or the Atlanta people who has the shop or the outside people who are coming in to make money, you know.
Right.
And now, don't get me wrong, they'll have the contest, and, you know, you got to pay to enter the contest, $20. So they're even making money off you entering the contest.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, they make
money.
So,
you know, I done been to conventions where it's 200 people in line. and you sitting there looking at your tattoo, and you sitting there looking at these people lying, you see what your tattoo is about to go up against, you know. But when you go to a convention and you're young, that's what gives you that inspiration to be better.
Right.
Yeah.
Because you'll go to that convention and you'll either do good or you'll kind of get humbled. Mm-hmm. But even if you get humbled, you get to go back to the shop. Like,
you got that fire in you.
Yeah, you got that fire in you. Sir. And it always it keeps you, like, lets you know what you need to work on, you know?
Yeah. That's why you should always do it, man. Like you said, it's good to go outside and see what everybody else is doing. Right, like I said, right. to keep up and stay going hard.
Right. I've looked at your work and it inspired me. You know, like, hey, man, this dude's doing clean work, you know.
Appreciate it.
So, I get inspiration from a lot of people, you know, and looking at their work, you know.
Definitely, man. Same here, bro. I want to go back to an earlier point you had made. You were saying, like, how you don't want to fly out that often anymore to tattoo celebrities or people who you just know over the years. So nowadays, I'm assuming, like, you get them to come to the shop?
I still fly out.
Still fly out, okay.
That's the thing, you know. And as you get older, like, you know, you kind of got to go with the wave. You know, you could sit there and, you know, say, well, I don't like doing this. And eventually them calls stop. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So now, I mean, it's certain people that, you know, I just like being around and it just breaks up the monotony. I think it's good if somebody could every now and then. Yeah. I don't think if you got an employee, they should sit here and talk about, oh, this guy want to fly me to here. Oh, he DM'd me. You know, I tell people, be leery of some of these people.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Just DMing you because no matter what level you are, people are going to DM you and say, come to Chicago, come to LA or Miami. And when you get there, it ain't going to be what you think sometimes. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? These people ain't made no concessions for you. I mean, it might be setting you up to get robbed.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You know, so you in this hotel room or wherever you at, you tattoo for 3-4 days, them people might send some people in, you know, so it's not safe, you know.
You got to be smart about it.
Right.
So what, I guess, quick, like, since you've been, you know, in your location for so long, how do you feel about, like, certain artists thinking you need to be, like, in a certain place to attract those kind of clients, that, like, the big names that you got? Like, because, like I said, you're not a person that's just, like, out there, you know what I'm saying? Like, I'm out here, L.A., New York, you know, being, like, living a lifestyle, right? You know what I'm saying? You're a very laid-back, chill dude. So it's like they find you. So do you feel like that's most important? Like, if you got the skill, you got the reputation, they're going to find you no matter where you at.
I think you always got to leave it open for both. But I think that people got to know, and you always got to set parameters when they fly you out. It's just going to be a way different cost associated with it.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
You know, I don't know if it's 3 times more or 4 times more. Mm-hmm. And it's hard for me to gauge because the clients were so high end that, you know, it was times where I never even, like, set a price. You know, they just gave me some money, you know. So
damn.
It was like, out of respect. They kind of, and these people who had tattoos, so they could kind of figure, you know, I gave this guy $3,000 to do this tattoo. So some of them would just, you know, but I think you need to always, like, keep, because you flying out always makes you look a little bit bigger than the other guy who's not.
Right.
You know what I mean? The way it is now, you flying out is going to help you look like, you know, you're a bigger time tattoo artist. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And a lot of times you could gauge your success on how often do these people want to fly me out or do they come in town? But a lot of times I prefer people come in town.
Right, right.
Because, you know, you got your, you know where to reach for the ink and you table.
You're comfortable.
I'm left-handed. So, you know, everything got to be set up a certain way, you know. And it's always, and I'll tell any artist, when you go on the road and you do work, if you could do good as work as you do at the shop on the road, you kind of know that you're getting good, you're getting better at adapting to it, you know. Because when you first go on the road and you don't have everything you're used to,
you're going to forget something.
You forget that chord.
Yep.
You had the Delta Dash things where it couldn't even do an overnight. It had to be on the next plane that came. Yeah, if you ever forget something, you have to use Delta Dash. It might cost you $200 or $300 to get that cord. And that's what make, when you pack in that stuff, it's what make you become, like, really, you know.
Detail-oriented.
Yeah, detail, right. Mm. You know, it'll really make you become that. Because if you forget something, that whole day you can't tattoo. And you don't think that you're in L.A. going to go to one of those L.A. tattoo shops and say, hey, let me borrow some stencil paper. They're going to look at you crazy.
Mm-hmm.
Like, no, I've had it happen.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, I was in Houston. You know, and I already know that the tattoo artists in Houston, they probably feel a way. You know, they see me tattooing these rockets or these, you know, football players. And you need ink or you need stencil paper. I mean, they'll do it maybe, but they looking at you like, you coming in our city taking our work. I want to tattoo that dude.
right.
Yeah.
Nah, that's crazy, man. So I know we were talking about adapting earlier. Quick question. So have you converted to rotaries and pens, or you still use coils, or like how have you adapted like to the change in equipment and technology, right?
Yeah, it was a big thing because I remember all the older tattooists, and you know, they say that they loyal to the coil, and it was almost like when all the rotaries came out, it was like, you know, the younger dudes using rotaries, and you know, and I think over the years a lot of the older people kind of went to rotaries. I've been using a Cheyenne. I use a Cheyenne.
Soul Nova.
Soul Nova. Exactly. Yeah, yep. You know, I always use Cheyenne, the regular pens at first, know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And then if it go bad, I send it to Cheyenne, they refurbish it. So, you know, at one point I sent them three pens and they sent me it in every different, you know, color, always reminded me of like where I was at. Like, that's when I used the red Cheyenne pen, or that's when I used the gold one, you know? Mm-hmm. And so once I got the Soul, when I first got the Soul Nova, I thought it ran too slow. Mm-hmm. It runs way slower than the other Cheyenne pens, you know. But what I noticed is for black and gray, for portrait, when it needed to be ran like slower speeds, it was better than the regular pen. The regular pen doesn't go slow enough to me when I really need like certain blends, where the Soul Nova, it does, you know.
Yeah. No, it does have that nice soft fit to it. Yeah. So that's cool. That's cool that you...
And that's the little short one, not the one with the battery.
Yeah, it's like the short, wide, that's one like wider use. One. Yeah. Really, you use that too?
Mm-hmm. I say 34 years in the game. How's your body feeling? Like, you feeling good? Like you said, a lot of times, you know, that carpal tunnel sneaks up, back, neck injuries, man. Like, you seem like you doing good to me. So, like, what do you do, man?
Yeah, I feel real, like, blessed that I haven't had, like, back problems. I know young artists I'm around, you know, and they have like back problems, you know, and I know that over the years, it just, a lot of times it just don't get better, you know, but even now, you know, like I try to keep my weight down, but you know, as a tattooist, you work so many hours and you don't eat right, or you don't drink enough water. And so now I just try to make sure I drink a lot of water, and you know, sometimes my wrists hurt more on my hand when I don't tattoo for a few days, you know. So I think, you know, from doing it like 6 days a week for 20 years, and like I said, now we take 2 days off. It's like I just feel blessed that I don't really have like a lot of problems like that.
Damn, so 6 days a week, 20 years. Like
20 years.
Like, what do you feel about like artists work ethic these days? And you feel like they work enough, man? Or what? Because how'd you manage that for so long?
And that's the thing, that, you know, I always, now I'm not around a lot of artists, you know what I mean? So a lot of things that a lot of artists, they know about from, like, and then I don't go on the internet and look at a lot of artists' pay. I mean, I would like to, but, you know, I'm 58, so I don't just, you know, I don't be on the phone all the time.
Yeah. That's good.
And even now, posting to Instagram, like, sometimes I go through phases where I might not post something for a month and a half, you know, and I just, it's like I'm starting to get like bored with it a little bit, but I know people still need to see the work you put down, you know. And now, even when I do a tattoo, I feel like it's good, you know. It's like sometimes, you know, like with everybody, you feel like it ain't good enough.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Where I think sometimes we be too hard on ourselves.
That's
people
real.
Would like to see that B-roll tattoo, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
Because they want to see some of that too, you know? Yeah. They don't want to just see all the best work. I think sometimes, like, which that's good where you could put stuff on your story or add a bunch of smaller tattoos to show people that, you know, because as clients, I think sometimes you could become a tattooist that talk about all these things you do and you don't do, and you intimidate the clients to where I really think that they don't want to come to you.
Yeah, they don't want to offend you, get something from you, and they feel like you're not going to try on it or something like that.
Yeah, you know.
That's why I pride myself all my side stories. I post almost every tattoo I do every day. It goes from small to tribal.
That's cool, man. Yeah. And that's the realest as it get right there. You know what I mean? Because people get to see, wow, man, I seen him grow from this to this. You know what I mean? And I seen your work. It's phenomenal. You just, you know, you're going to grow, and they appreciate that because that's the real. You know, everybody don't want to see somebody who posts these whole back pieces and you know what I mean, that only do this style. Sometimes, you know, it's – I've had people say I went to this shop, but, you know. And what I get a lot in my shop is people who might say I went to another shop and they treated me bad.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That's what they say.
We get that a lot.
They treat me bad because – I mean, I don't know what it is. A lot of times tattooists, I mean, they start making money. I think it's hard to not get an ego when you sit up here making this money. People coming to you like they need you so bad. I've told tattoo artists to work for me. I'm like, yo, some of these people, man, they got kids. They 25 years old. Yeah. They got a lot of things they could spend this money on.
Right.
And I think me being older with kids, a family, it's easy for me to look at, like, people who work, they spend their last with people. And I think sometimes the tattoo artists, they don't appreciate, like,
they don't.
They just look at it like, you know, sometimes I see interviews where they talk too critically of the clients.
Yeah.
And they gonna do things. They don't know. This ain't what they do.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if some of these tattoo artists went to their office or where they work, they would be out of place. You know.
Right, right.
So I think sometimes tattooists could get like kind of cocky and really like make the people feel uncomfortable.
Well, the way I always live my life is we both walk on the same on the sidewalk, we the same level.
Yeah.
You could be a CEO, you could be a guy who works at a fast food restaurant.
Yeah, and you from Mississippi. Yeah. People from there are nice. Yeah, so you know.
So, like, what do you think the best way is to kill that ego, or is it just something like some people just that's in them, and they can't change that, or is it? Do you feel like everybody can be humble?
Internet make everybody kind of cynical. I just think it just.
Yeah, that's real.
I just think
you'll never hear me argue.
The internet just kind of like it, kind of like even if you wouldn't like that, you know, if I grew up in this era. And this is me being like a million when I say this. If I had to start now and redo my career starting now, 33 years out, I don't know if I would become what I became, like what I became.
Yeah,
I think that's right. I think I'd be up in there and fare good with all these people, but I don't feel like, you know, based on what I went, my career and how I was looked at, I don't know if I would be looked at like that if I had, you know, because it's too much.
Do you feel like becoming a successful tattooer now is harder, or was it harder back then when you came up?
I respect.
That's a hard one.
Yeah, it's hard because it's like.
That's a hard one.
Well, you're talking about success, but for me, I respect the older tattoo generation because they didn't have social media. They had to do the groundwork. They had to probably put the flyers out in the mall. Yeah. So you had to do the groundwork.
Just to get the knowledge was a lot harder.
You said for you to peek at something, just even for a split second.
Man, we got to realize, too.
My personal opinion, old school.
Yeah. Bro, I remember when people would get tattoo magazines and you didn't want to cut your magazines up, but then they would have sections like flowers or this. Older tattoo artists would keep like what they call a morgue file, and they'll keep files with flowers, whatever they like. So they got like tattoo pictures of flowers that they kept or Japanese. Yeah. You know what I mean? Mm. Back then, you weren't going to get good at Japanese because who before you was doing Japanese like that? Right. You know what I mean?
Off you. You said you found a magazine that was $100 with you and your wife. Everybody look at their phone for free.
Yeah.
No, it's definitely two sets of challenges. Yeah. It's like nowadays the knowledge is out there. It's a lot easier to get good at it. but then it's right. it's so oversaturated. Like we were exactly. saying, like it's now you gotta.
I mean, you'll go on Instagram and see this badass tattoo.
Yeah.
You know, and it might have 200 likes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, but the guy might be in Kansas.
Yeah.
Right.
He keep to himself.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Nobody. You,
I call those snipers.
Yeah. 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 Right.
The ones.
You know, it amazes me sometimes.
Yeah.
And then look, and then I've seen pages where somebody. That's why I'll tell people: don't go off. Just do what you could do. Don't worry about the followers.
Yeah,
right.
I see
right.
people with 100,000 followers. All they got is lips. They did some lips, or they did a girl. You know, her butt and had her all her stuff showing, mm-hmm. and just had one little tattoo, of some lipstick. You know, so
social media advertising.
Yeah, you know, so but. I guess with them, you know, the way they work that, I don't know if they bought likes or followers, but hey,
not everything real on the internet.
But then, exactly. Then like you said, some people just don't know. Like the tattoo industry, even for me being in here for 3 years, it's still a mystery. Like to a regular person, like when I got introduced to Theo, like some of the stuff I was overthinking, and then once I really was in the industry, I was like, oh. Yeah, everything's pretty just smooth.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, but you're around somebody who's smooth like
that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, I meet a lot of people.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? I come across, you know, I've probably met him before, but more so it's me looking at, and I don't even look at people, but I always, from seeing him, I always saw that he was humble.
Mm-hmm.
He did good work.
Mm-hmm.
He, you know, he work over here and they keep a staff of people.
Mm-hmm.
That it means a lot. To be able to keep a staff of people means a lot. That's one of the biggest things with owning the shop.
It's one of the hardest things. Like a lot of people don't understand. Like I said, it's easy to get the money. And all of us can make enough money opening a shop.
Right.
But to get a staff and keep it and keep everybody happy is like it's tough, especially in this day and age where it's like, you know, everybody, you know, is with like there's so many people ready to go and open up a private studio because
a lot of selfishness.
Yeah, right. So it's a lot of it. Like I said, honestly, comes down to just having the right people around. You know what I'm saying? Like it's like just having people who got the same mindset.
The right people around you.
But how you are as a owner and as a leader will reflect in your staff too. I feel like too in some way.
Yeah.
So if you were a selfish owner or you know you won't really care about the well-being of your artists, it'll eventually come back to bite you in the ass. Happened to a lot of these shops, you know, that once were big shops and fell apart. You know,
believe that law of attraction thing is real. You put out there is what you get. So.
Yeah, nah, I believe that too.
Especially me working, like I didn't start until I was 30, and I already had the work experience. And just like you said, you had that toxic management. All the employees be like, I don't give a damn about this job.
Right.
You have a toxic environment in a tattoo shop. I don't give a about this job.
See, even just like me, I started later where I had already worked jobs to where I knew what it took to like, you know, to learn this. I got to chill, you know. Mm-hmm. And even now, like, I do other things like make sneakers but I go at everything that I try to learn. Mm-hmm. I go at it like how I got into tattooing.
Mm, yeah.
So if we all make sneakers or you know, I learned from a dude in LA, the shoe surgeon, really known like shoemaker, you know. But when I went there in 2017, I went in there like, you know, like I was 18 going to college, you know. And I even put in my head that I'm not going to expect to be good for 10 years,
right?
You know. So I look at it just like how I got into tattooing, like, you got to work your way up.
Mm-hmm.
You got to do this first. You can't just want
to
do this. And me always using tattooing, my career tattooing as a base for anything else I get into, it always make me stay humble and always look at everybody who I learn from around me like they are who made me.
Yeah, I like how you said that too.
Yeah, I look at that.
Yeah, no, that's real, man. Shit.
From the ground up.
Yeah. It don't cost you nothing to stay humble, man. So shit, it's... You just gotta do it. Before we go, man, if you got just like one piece of advice or just one statement you can make to this new generation of tattooers, man, that want to have that longevity in their career, man, like what can you tell them? Like what's some a thing that just like impacted you so much that you like, you know, I gotta let people know this?
Man, I would say the one thing is just always be good to your customers, no matter what level they are. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, I know sometimes these people come in here, they want that same infinity with the names in it. And, right. you know, and sometimes we could be like, well, I don't want to, you know, but mm-hmm. you got to think like that might be somebody who passed away.
Yeah.
But a lot of artists, you just got to put yourself in these people's shoes. Yeah. They don't know about these tattoos. You know, mm-hmm. they just seen some TV shows, and even the TV shows might have showed them like, this is how people act in a tattoo shop. So they think that that's really what it's like when they walk in a tattoo shop. And mm-hmm. then they come in the tattoo shop and they see the people not fighting and they not arguing. And, mm-hmm. you know, nothing yeah. against all that, because they did it to get ratings.
Right,
and
right.
some of those people were able to take that and become successful off even that, the TV right. thing. You know what I mean? Yeah. But I would tell people, just nurture the relationships that you form with these people. Mm-hmm. If you nurture these relationships, and you know, I'm tattooing most of the people when I moved here in 2000 that I tattooed when they were 18, now they're like 40, 41, yeah. 42. They're bringing me their kids now. Yeah. So imagine when you bring your kid to me, how mm-hmm. now I feel like I got to nurture this person. Yeah. And then they come to me and they ask me for advice. I'm going to college and they see all these celebrities on the wall who they look up to, Jamal Crawford and, you know, yeah. and Carmelo Anthony, you know. Thanks, so they just look at it like, wow, man, you know, and they ask me for advice and I give it. But mm-hmm. I would say the main thing is just trying to like nurture that relationship, you know, right. stay humble and nurture that relationship, and you know, and you'll do good. And you'll do good and have a good career.
Yeah, yeah. I always tell people, my first tattoo convention, one thing I learned, motherfuckers don't talk mm-hmm. at all.
Yeah, artists want to keep them.
They don't know how to talk.
Hey, every one of them conventions you go to, you know, like I don't do a lot of conventions now, but now that my daughter tattooed, we're going to start doing at least mm-hmm. like two or three a year, you know what I mean? Yeah, but even going to the conventions, it's like, you know, it's like everyone you go to, it makes you better. Yeah.
Right, right.
Every time you go to one. Mm-hmm. So if you got to spend the money and go just experience it, if they accept you, yeah, go out there to where you working with these people and you yeah. form a relationship with these people. Mm-hmm. Next thing you know, y'all talking about, hey, I'm going to go to Philly to mm-hmm. that show or the DC show, you mm-hmm. know. So I think, you know, just treat your clients right and if you can, have a good relationship with a couple other tattoo artists.
Yeah, right, know? Right.
And in closing, I could say that I was always so busy that I just kind of like worked and I didn't get out. I didn't do these tattoo artist art shows. I just mm-hmm. kind of just tunnel vision, just grinded it all the way out, you know? Yeah.
Do you regret just having that tunnel vision, or you feel like...
No, I don't regret it not one
bit. Because I'm like...
I don't regret it one bit. I don't. You know what I mean?
About to see what this answer about to be.
Yeah, because you're not going to always be like... I mean, a lot of people not going to... You know, and like they say, like, as you get successful, it does get, you know, the friends, things, the relationships, they start falling off a little. You will notice that. You know, as you get better, everybody's not happy. When you're trying and you start off... Oh, right. It's like when somebody open up a restaurant or whatever. Mm-hmm. Oh, the first month, it's booming.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, because everybody just want to come see what's going on.
Mm-hmm. Right.
But after that, like, what about next year, mm-hmm. 2 years from now?
Yeah.
It just kind of die off, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah, but I would just say stay humble and form. You know, if you could do athletes, then look at that kid who in college who mm-hmm. come to you.
Right,
and,
right.
And just look at every one of these athletes, like, he might make it to the league.
Oh, that's mm-hmm. how I look
at it. Yeah. Or, look, if he play overseas, he's still a professional basketball player.
Yeah.
You know, and if you're able to get an NBA guy, I mean, they get traded every 1 or 2 years. Yeah. Now, your tattoo went to 20, 30 people here, mm-hmm. 20 more here. And just in a few years, you develop a name and, you know, and you right. just have
yeah,
to.
Yeah, that's how it works.
You just have to keep it going.
Yeah. That's real, man.
Exactly how it works.
Sure, man. Again, bro. Thank you, man, for coming on, man. Like I said,
y'all great, man. You guys are great.
Man, we're truly humble, bro. You a true Atlanta OG, man.
Thanks.
We just want to give you your flowers, bro. Man. Thank you.
It means a lot.
Yes, sir, man. So, peace, man. We'll be back next time.
All right.
Yes, sir.